On this episode of The Big Number, we ask the question, where will LeBron play next year? We also take a look at the Lakers' massive trade for Walker Kessler. And finally, we take a look at the impact of Kawhi back in Toronto. That and more on The Big Number. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to The Big Number. I am Tom Haberstroh, free agency edition of The Big Number this week. Dan, we're done with the draft. We're done with the finals. And our minds are still getting blown here. We're recording this, and I'm sure some stuff will pop up as we're recording, but we might as well do this and see what happens here. Dan, how are you?
I'm good. 75 straight minutes of Colin Sexton talk. Let's go. Let's lock in real quick right now on nothing, but I'm good, man. It's all melting. I forgot that I wrote some things. I think takes that I've delivered. Don't even remember what they are, but I'm sure they're going to be used against me in a court of law at some point. It's all happening. Guys are changing teams. We're turning the clock back to 2019 2018 maybe even further than that. There's an awful lot going on, but hit me with it, Tom. What is this week's big number?
This week's big number is 33. That is the number of all-stars that LeBron James has played with in his NBA career. 33 teammates that have made at least one all-star in their career. And Dan looks like he's going to seek another couple all-stars on his list with his next destination because he is a free agent. As of this recording, as of this moment, he is a free agent, could sign anywhere, because he apparently, according to Rich Paul and ESPN reporting, that he's willing to sign for the veteran minimum. All he wants is complete happiness. That is the variable that matters most to LeBron James at this point. So he's leaving the Lakers. Dan, 33 All-Stars. I'm going to do this in one breath. I think I'm going to try. Do you want me to read off every single All-Star that LeBron James has played with? And this isn't while he's with the guy that he won, he earned an All-Star appearance. This is at any point in that player's career, was he an All-Star? And did LeBron actually play with this guy as a teammate? So the 33 All-Stars that LeBron James has played with. Ready? Drumroll, please. Shaquille O'Neal, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, Anthony Davis, Ray Allen, Carmelo Anthony, Kyrie Irving, Russell Westbrook, Dwight Howard, Luka Doncic, Kevin Love, Rajon Rondo, Ben Wallace, Sean Marion, Marc Gasol, Darren Williams, Derrick Rose, Zydrunas Ilgauskas, Rashard Lewis, Carlos Boozer, Brandon Ingram, Antoine Jameson, Isaiah Thomas. Couldn't do it. Andre Drummond, Jerry Stackhouse, Mo Williams, Kyle Korver, Wally Szczerbiak, D'Angelo Russell. I'm not done yet. Juwan Howard, Tyson Chandler, Juwan Howard, DeAndre Jordan, and Jamal McGlure. Big Cat.
Wow. I'm glad you did that because if I just started screaming all those names, my neighbors would we got to have the cops go and just check on, knock on the door, see what's going on as he's screaming Jamal McGlure again, this guy. That's a lot of players that he's had as all-star teammates. And there are a lot of players that have been all-stars in the NBA, Tom. So do you have a sub number for me here on this LeBron stat? Oh, yeah.
All right. So I looked up every all-star since 2000 and wanted to see how many of them LeBron James has played with. And so I took out, there's actually been 164, including LeBron James. So take that out. He's played with that guy. Played with 30. Yeah. Another crazy thing that LeBron James has done. We'll get to that in a minute. LeBron James has played with 32 of the 163 All-Stars since 2000. That is 19.6% of the All-Stars since 2000. This millennium, LeBron James has played with them. He has played, I already said the list, but he has played with one out of every five All-Stars since 2000. And he wasn't even in the league in 2000 or 2001 or 2002 or 2003. I mean, he got drafted in 2003, and in the first stint with the Cavs, then the Miami Heat, of course, with Ray Allen and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh and Big Z twice. Big Cat Jamal McGlure also on that Miami, you know, roster at one point. It's an incredible list of names that LeBron James has played with in 23 years. And with the Lakers, I think there's 11 of them that he played with on the Lakers. Carmelo Anthony, DeAndre Jordan, Andre Drummond, D'Angelo Russell. And the next destination for LeBron James is probably going to have two All-Stars. Let's see. The Miami Heat have two in Bam Adebayo and Giannis Antetokounmpo, who is now coming over from the Milwaukee Bucks. Not yet official. I guess we're going to wait till July 6th for that to be finalized. Norm Powell is also not going to be on that list because he is now going up to Chicago on a two-year, $45 million deal. And so, yeah, he is going to be a free agent. Maybe it's Miami. Maybe it's Golden State with Stephen Curry and Draymond Green. Does Golden State somehow flip Jimmy Butler to the Washington Wizards for Anthony Davis? Who knows? But that could be another three more. Well, two more additionally to Anthony. He's already played with Anthony Davis. And then Cleveland. Who knows what Cleveland's up to? Brian Windhorst at ESPN was saying, maybe they go get Jaylen Brown, who's still that the whole thing has not resolved itself in Boston. So LeBron has not played with Jaylen Brown, has not played with James Harden, has not played with Donovan Mitchell or Evan Mobley or Jared Allen. So those are four all-stars there right now with the Cleveland Cavaliers. I guess James Harden's a free agent too. This is all to say that by next week, that number goes from 33 potentially to 35 or more that LeBron James is going to be playing with 35 all-stars since he entered the league, which is an incredible, incredible stat. So I've already, you know, talked about on this program how LeBron has had four Hall of Fame careers, 8 years with the Los Angeles Lakers, eight all-stars, seven All-NBA appearances. He won a championship in 2020. And if you look at it with the Basketball Reference Hall of Fame tool predictor, he has about an 86% chance based on that resume alone, only NBA resume, of being a Hall of Famer, purely because he had those eight All-Stars, seven All-NBA appearances. He was a really good player in the advanced metrics. And according to the history of Hall of Fame voting, he would be just on those 8 years would be a Hall of Famer. And that's not even considering the international, the Olympic play, that he has also got gold medals in there too. So it wraps up an incredible run with the Lakers. And Dan, we're now learning that the Los Angeles Lakers have pivoted and made a huge deal with the Utah Jazz to get Walker Kessler, getting a $130 million deal with over 4 years. And in exchange for that acquisition, they're going to give up two first round picks unprotected and two first round swaps, 2028, 2030, 2031 first, and a 2033 first. Dan, your first thought after LeBron James leaves Los Angeles, well, potentially, I guess he could go to the Clippers. I don't see that happening, but, leaving the Lakers and is now going to find his next spot with the hope of completing some sort of happiness thing in his life that I don't really know exactly what that means. But LeBron James wants to go somewhere else other than the Lakers, and they've already pivoted.
Yeah, I mean, my first thought about it was, I laughed because I guess I tend toward jokes. But the first thought I had was, well, yeah, of course, it's not about money anymore. LeBron has made, like, I think literally $1 billion over the course of his career and endorsements and salary. And so, like, yeah, what's it about now? Just like this little thing, no big deal. Just like complete happiness and like total consciousness and like, you know, the meaning of life. You know, yeah, like, if you can offer me that, then I'll go play with you. And it kind of doesn't really matter. Like, yeah, maybe I'll come for the room mid-level or whatever if you can make me one with the universe. Like, yeah, we'll figure that out. So that made me laugh. Like, what's the one ask beyond a max? It's like, yeah, you know, just become, the center of all consciousness. That's all. The other thing that I thought was, this is a long time coming, right? What, 18 months or so, going back to the trade that made Luka Doncic a Laker. Like, I think we all sort of saw it. I know I wrote something in, I think it was March, the days and months all melt together, about the Lakers being, it's like a tale of two teams. We talked about it on this show as well. Like, there was the best versions of the Lakers were two sort of separate things. There was the Luka and Austin Reeves led lineups, and there were the LeBron led lineups. And the roster was going to clearly be built moving forward around Luka Doncic. And then Austin Reeves re-signs the 4-year, $185 million contract for him. And like, clearly they were going to move in that direction. So what was LeBron to the Lakers at this point, but essentially like a $52 million cap hold that in order to, reorganize, reimagine what the Lakers would be moving forward, that needed to go away. And so did LeBron. And what that turned into, as we talked about now, like, and we'll get into it more, but it's Luka had the number one option on thing on his wish list was, I want to play with an A-list center, I believe was the language that Dave McMenamin had used in his report, like A-list center. Whether you think Walker Kessler is or isn't that, that's, reasonable, people can disagree, but, screen, dive, offensive rebound, rim protector, like 7'2" monster who's, I think turns 25 next month or later this month. So like, to grow along with him, like it lines up neatly. And then you fill in the rest sort of around that. And there will be a lot of filling out to do. And whether this makes the Lakers a championship contender moving forward, more will be revealed. But like it was a separation that kind of we'd seen coming. And then the third reaction I had was, okay, so then where do you find happiness, joy, the opportunity to play, to sort of continue to define for yourself what a valuable end game is in the sport? And, it sort of depends on what you're hearing. I mean, most of the reporting is, doesn't care. Money's not the top priority. Rich Paul says it on the podcast he has with Max Kellerman. Like, that became the decision maker. Like, it's not about getting the top possible dollar. It's about finding a good situation. All right, is a good situation, playing alongside friends that you're happiest with? Is a good situation continuing to compete for championships? Is a good situation being closer to home, one of the homes that you've had? Is a good situation, sort of a breath of fresh air, a new kind of challenge, new teammates? I think LeBron will take his time and determine what that is. But as he does that, I think the rest of it leaves a lot of space and opening for us to consider what would represent a pretty fun next chapter in, what again is like a chapter. We thought this was the last chapter. We thought the Lakers would be the last chapter at some point in the last 8 years, which, by the way, is the longest single tenure he's had with any team, which feels bonkers. But not only is it not the last chapter, LeBron was an all-star last year who averaged 23-7-7 in the playoffs and was the best player on a team that won a first-round series. Like, there's still more chapter to be written, it feels like. And so the question now is just like, where does he want to do it?
Dan, I think the happiness thing, I think what Rich Paul and LeBron James are doing is a power play. It's not about money. It's about not about star power. It's about making LeBron happy. And so what can you do to make LeBron happy? So think about it. If you're Cleveland, what does that mean? Does it mean we got to trade Donovan Mitchell? Does it mean we have to trade Evan Mobley? Like, you want to bring in Jaylen Brown, as Brian Windhorst at ESPN reported, like not reported, but speculated, is that potentially the Cleveland Cavaliers could make a play for Jaylen Brown. What does happiness look like for LeBron? Well, I think it's power. Right now, he's exuding that power where he's saying to all these teams, what I care about is being happy. I need to be fulfilled in some sort of way. What is that? How does he accomplish that? Well, I think it's, I get to call the shots. It's like, this is the type of team I want to play with, to play for. Here are the kind of players I want. And if you can go out and get those guys, then yeah, let's talk. Or do you have those guys in-house? Yeah, let's talk. Are you going to be able to conform the organization around what I want and what will make me happy? Let's do it. And it could be as simple as, I just want to play with Steph. Could be as simple as, I just want to retire in Cleveland. What a storybook ending. Could be as simple as, I feel like I left Miami on bad terms. And I want to make that whole again. And would it be cool to go back to the place where I first won a championship with Pat Riley and get to team up with Giannis Antetokounmpo and Bam Adebayo and try to win this thing again in Miami? Wouldn't that be cool? I don't know, man. To me, it all seems like he's trying to exercise leverage with his next destination by having this nebulous catch-all term that he just wants to be happy. My sense, and this is not reporting, my sense is that he wants the lowest stakes or the lowest downside to his next destination. You know, when he went to Cleveland, it was all about winning that championship and ending the 50-plus year drought. Mm-hmm. With that option now, I think it's pretty low stakes if he goes back to Cleveland. Because he's already won a championship for the city, Dan. They already have a star-laden roster that is pretty clear that they need an upgrade in order to get past the Knicks. They've failed in getting deep into the postseason in two straight years, where it just feels like they're not even in the championship conversation. If he goes to Miami, now that he's got Giannis there, I feel like there is some downside risk. Because it just feels like if he's going to team up with Giannis, another superstar after he was with Luka, if they don't win a championship there, I think he will be attached to that. If he goes to the Golden State Warriors and they kind of flop, they're older, as Skip Bayless called them, the Olden State Warriors, it does feel like, yeah, no, it's fun. If it was anybody else, I feel like everyone would be running with that. But yeah, the Olden State Warriors, it does seem like to me the move with the lowest stakes and the feel-good storybook ending would be Cleveland. And they have some moves that they can make. You know, Jared Allen, there's a lot of teams out there, including the Utah Jazz, that could covet a center going into next year. We also have the Boston Celtics signing away Mitchell Robinson, which, Dan, we could spend a whole podcast talking about that deal.
Sure.
We're going to blow right by it. But there's options that the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are a second apron team last year, may not have been able to do last year. But now that James Harden's a free agent, they have some moves to make. And I think that the Cleveland Cavaliers, for me, are the front runners in the LeBron James sweepstakes. And then I would say the Golden State Warriors and the Miami Heat are on a different tier. Because I think just the Cavs give him the storybook ending. You know, if this is his farewell tour next season, maybe not, maybe it isn't. But I think the Cavs, if he doesn't win a championship in this second run, I don't think people are going to hold him. Well, I should rephrase that. I don't think many people will hold it against him if he doesn't win a championship next year. Because he already brought them a championship. And then they haven't been able to get to that kind of prominence again without him. So, Dan, what are your thoughts on Cleveland as a potential landing spot for LeBron? And really, the fact that we're talking about this in 2026, 24 years later, is pretty nutso that he's still a high-level player and could be the missing piece for Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, we tend to lean on numbers as opposed to narrative on our show, right? But it's hard not to be in some way romantic about the idea of, you know, like the hero's journey always ends with the return home, right? Like the idea of this is how the grand sweeping epics, you know, like Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey, you know, right? Not that I know he's not the guy that wrote it, but like the idea of these things as they come up, they're the circle, the circular aspect of it. You come back, but you are transformed by your journey through the world. And the possibility of LeBron being able to end the career where he began it, where he had to leave to then learn how to win, to come back, to be able to bring the championship that was sort of his destiny, then had to go elsewhere again to raise his family, but then returns home in such a fundamentally different sort of structure of his life and place of it. There's something sort of compelling about that. Just as the idea, like, he could theoretically get to 25 years there. Like, if he plays two more years, which again, he's averaged 23-7-7 in the playoffs. Like, it's not outside the realm of possibility that he could still be able to do it in 2 years if he wants to.
On that, Dan?
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
On that, you know, we've cited this stat quite a bit on this show, estimated plus minus over at Dunks and Threes. It's an all-in-one metric that attempts to quantify your on-court value by points per 100 possessions that you add to a team. LeBron James right now at age 41, Dan, is the best player on the free agency market. He is the number one player in EPM, expected EPM, meaning projecting going forward. He's plus 2.1. Plus 2.1. Jalen Duren is tied at plus 2.1 at 22 years old. Same as LeBron James at 41 years old. James Harden's at 1.2. Norm Powell's at 2.0. Walker Kessler, by the way, 0.4. So if you're looking at metrics to back up why the Cleveland Cavaliers would want to get in the LeBron James business beyond just the storybook ending, he's the best free agent on the market. Like, there are not many guys who have moved the needle as much as LeBron James at age 41. Now, he's not prime LeBron. He's not even the same LeBron as 2 years ago. But the guy that you saw in the playoffs, the guy you saw with Luka and Austin Reeves and Marcus Smart, they figured out how to play together and win at a high level, and then they got hurt. I think LeBron James is absolutely worth pursuing for the reported 12 to 14 teams that are trying to get in the LeBron James business. You can talk yourself into a lot of teams, not just those three that I mentioned earlier, but Dan, the Cavs, in terms of a powerful, physical 3-4, they need LeBron. There's a big hole on the roster of a guy who's as physical, moves the ball, and can be a multi, now he's not the prime 1-5 as Spo used to call him, defender. But if you're playing next to Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley and or Jared Allen, you're not going to have to carry the offense in ways that he did in the playoffs last year without Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves. So I'm telling you, man, I think LeBron's still got a lot left in the tank. And so you're right to say maybe he gets to 25 years, because how many guys hang it up after an all-star season? We've almost never seen that in NBA history, that a guy who's still a 27-7 guy is just going to hang it up all of a sudden. I think LeBron James has another 2 good years in him.
Well, yeah. I mean, to your point, like, he made the all-star team last year, and we're in an era where top 25-ish guys just like don't really change teams in free agency, right? Like, for the most part, those guys, you know, under the auspices of this new collective bargaining agreement, or I guess now several years old, like, you extend and then you move off the extension, you know, like, it's a trade or it's a sign and trade. It's you lock in the money and then you get moved afterward. And which is why we wind up seeing in free agency, with the exception of Jalen Brunson a few years ago, it's more often than not like, it's the 2-year, $45 million deal for Norm Powell, right? It's guys who are like a little bit, you know, further along in their career or not quite at that same level of production. And it calls to mind like in like the scene in Moneyball where it's like, you know, you got Jonah Hill pointing out at the whiteboard to Brad Pitt and saying like, here's all the things that are right with this player. His one defect is that he throws weird. Chad Bradford, right? But like, with like, LeBron is a top 25 player in the NBA. He just averaged this, and this. He is, by all these metrics, like a top 25 or 30 player in the league. The defect is that he's 42 years old. And like, and also one of the more complicated in terms of outsized figures to fit into your building and your structure that we can imagine. But there are places where that can fit. And yeah, like, whatever, we'll hit it now, and then I'll find a third little number, I suppose. But like, the Cavs, in the years without LeBron, there are 45 seasons of Cleveland Cavaliers basketball where he hasn't been on the roster, and they've won 8 playoff series. And in the 11 years he's been a member of the Cavaliers, they've won 21, including the only championship in franchise history. And like, that's a different era of LeBron. But like, as you say, what have the Cavs been missing in these in-between years? It's like the guy that goes between the bigs and the guards. Whether that was the formulation with Darius Garland or now with James Harden, it's like we've cycled through, you know, can Max Strus be a smaller version of this? Can DeAndre Hunter be this? Is it Dean Wade, who now is on his way to Philadelphia, which opens up the spot? You know, like there's all these, like, who's the small forward that's going to make us the next good next competitive Cavaliers team? And the answer to that question at every point over the last 23 years has been the small forward who makes the Cleveland Cavaliers a championship contender is LeBron James. And so now, like, the idea that potentially it could be him again, like, yeah, there's something to be said for that. I think that there are potentially thorny basketball questions of, like, if he's your 3-4, you know, like, or yeah, A, how do you fit him in there? Is it on the minimum? If not, if you have to make space to get money for it, are you having to move off of one of Allen or Mobley, as you mentioned? Is somebody else going to need to come in with him that's another star-level player? You know, Brian had mentioned Jaylen Brown. You know, how dramatically does everything else need to change for him to go there? And if that does have to, you know, result in dramatic changes, then, you know, are we talking about, you know, is Evan Mobley now your full-time five? Or, you know, is it Jared Allen, but then LeBron's playing the three? And if so, who's guarding your big wings? There are, like, on-court components, to say nothing of James Harden is best with the ball in his hands. Donovan Mitchell is best with the ball in his hands. So is LeBron. It's going to be a whole new version of him learning to be the number three guy along, you know, and maybe that's a tougher sell when it's not Luka over there, you know, like, so those are all real things to figure out. But there's an on-court case to be made, and there's a narrative case certainly to be made. It would be a hell of a lot of fun to see. There are other potential fun options to talk about, though, and maybe we'll get through a couple of those.
Yeah, let's do two little numbers here, because we already talked about the Cleveland one and the fact that it is both the on-court and off-court maybe the best choice for LeBron. But there are a lot of teams that could get LeBron and be very happy about this and are going to certainly pursue him. So let's go. Let's hit your two little numbers. We're going to have a quick break here, and then we'll hear a couple other destinations that you've earmarked here for LeBron James as he enters his 24th season after leaving the Lakers. This week's big number is 33, the number of All-Stars that LeBron James has played with in his NBA career. I think he's going to try to add to that number with his next destination. We talked about the Cavs, a little bit about the Miami Heat, but you have two little numbers here about his potential next destinations. What's your first little number, Dan?
First little number this week is plus 29, which was the net rating of Team USA at the 2024 Summer Olympics when Stephen Curry and LeBron James played together, according to our pals at Synergy Sports. Looked that up this morning. When those two guys were on the floor during the Olympics, the U.S. scored 125.4 points per 100 possessions, and they allowed 96.4 points per 100, which is a plus 29 points per 100 possession net rating, which, if it sounds like a lot, it's because it is. Now, obviously, probably worth saying this just to be explicit, the 2026-27 Golden State Warriors roster will be a little less talented than Team USA. You can only translate international production to the NBA context, but so much. And yeah, every player on the roster is not going to be an all-star or all-NBA caliber player. However, there does seem to be some momentum toward LeBron and Steph finally, after all the years and clashes and finals moments and everything else, actually partnering up in the Bay, especially after Draymond Green's decision earlier this week to decline his $27.7 million player option for next season with an interest and an eye toward signing a new multi-year deal, but at a lower number that potentially affords more flexibility for adding to the roster right now, including maybe adding LeBron James to the roster. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily guarantee anything, right? Like, we just watched a super old version of the roster in Golden State last year, sort of sputter through the regular season, catch fire at moments, lose Jimmy Butler midway through, stutter, you know, get into the play-in, have one wonderful play-in game against the Clippers, but then fall short, not make the playoffs, finish, I think it was 37-45. So, like, adding famous players we're familiar with doesn't guarantee you anything. But what do you think of the possibility of LeBron James joining Stephen Curry and Draymond Green in Golden State?
Super fun. That would be super fun. I don't know if they'll be any good. Like, it all depends on how much how much Draymond and LeBron and Steph. Now, they're professionals. They'll try to play as much as they can. But to me, if he goes to Golden State, it's quote unquote closer to home in LA. If you know, Bronny and the families decide to stick around in LA, it's not quite as far as Miami. It's not New York. And staying in California, but going to the Bay to play with, for the Warriors would be super fun. I mean, there's no doubt about it that just me, not as the analyst, I think just as a basketball fan, watching LeBron James and Stephen Curry play in Paris and winning gold was one of the coolest basketball moments of my lifetime. And so to see them potentially link up in the Warriors for, I mean, maybe we're underselling this, is that it, is it possible that LeBron James is not going to be the only one who's going to have a farewell tour in Golden State if it is indeed Stephen Curry and Draymond Green's last hurrah up there too? I'm not saying that they're retiring, but I could see a scenario in which like LeBron signs a 2-year deal and decides like, hey, I want to see how this goes, or it could be just on a 1-year deal, but deciding, maybe this is how we go out, is my clutch brother, Draymond Green, and then we got the splash brother, Stephen Curry. Maybe we say night-night to our careers in Golden State. They sign a 40-year-old Al Horford back, and they bring back LeBron, but outside of that, Jimmy Butler's out for the season or much of next season with the torn ACL. I don't know what it looks like for the Golden State Warriors beyond Steph, LeBron, and Draymond Green in terms of star power. Yaxel Lendenberg is going to be on the team. But Dan, it seems like that would be a pure fun play. Like if we're talking happiness in terms of just like, the most fun I've played basketball with was Stephen Curry, and that's what I want to do. That's the happiest I've been as a basketball player on the floor. Just pure, pure happiness playing with the greatest shooter who ever lived. I could see that being as a play, but in terms of the basketball fit, I don't think it's a great one. I don't think they have the defense in order to maintain a title contention in Golden State. But when 45-50 games in Golden State and then potentially, you know, play in the playoffs together. Yeah, I think Golden State could be a destination, but I don't think that is a, I want to win a championship and so I'm going to Golden State. Now, if they somehow strike a deal with the Washington Wizards to upgrade their defense with Anthony Davis, then that's a different story. They have first round picks that they could attach to a Jimmy Butler contract. I was surprised that they didn't move Jimmy Butler last year. I think if it was in a package deal with Anthony Davis, this changes the equation completely.
I get that. The reporting that's come out in the last couple of days, I think Kevin O'Connor had reported her Monday morning. That was kind of the package deal that was being considered. And then the subsequent reporting, I think I know Tim Kawakami at the San Francisco Standard, and I believe also Mark Spears at ESPN's Anscape had reported like, from either side of that, either from the Warriors or from the Wizards side, like not so much interest in a Jimmy for AD built swap. And that's, I think to some degree you can get that from the Wizards side or the Warriors side of it rather. Like they've been adamant, like, yeah, no, we believe in Jimmy. We're going to like trust Jimmy to get back. And maybe that's foolish. Maybe that's not the right way to approach it as you look into like, how do we get through an 82 game season with this veteran roster? And yeah, you look at a second unit that at this point looks like it's going to include like Yaxel Lendeborg and, you know, Guy Santos and Al Horford and Will Richard. And, you know, maybe if Moses Moody from his own, you know, major knee and major leg injury is able to come back, like, or whatever. You know, I think they just re-signed DeAnthony Melton, I believe, earlier today. Like it's not the most imposing second unit you ever seen in your life, but there's some flexibility. If nothing else, guys that play the way Steve Kerr likes to play and that fit around Steph. And I think that's the thing, like you're right to point, maybe that's not a championship contender, but it's the way that the Warriors have kind of wanted to be and feel. And to that point, here's my sub number on the Warriors, right? 20. That's how many letters are in the phrase meaningful basketball. And the reason I bring that up is because Stephen Curry has repeatedly said over the course of the last few years that that's what he wants to be playing over the twilight of his career. And what Tom Haberstroh was in the quote that a source familiar with James' thinking gave to ESPN's Dave McMenamin on Tuesday. It was, let me pull it up here. LeBron James came to the conclusion that he wanted to continue playing, quote, meaningful competitive basketball. Open your third eye. I'm just saying, like, not, sometimes they tell us without telling us, you know what I'm saying? So it's possible that that's what we're looking at here. Yeah, I don't know if it would be great. I think it would be fun, and I think it'd be interesting. Similarly interesting, our second little number this week, 4,617. That's how many minutes of front court play the Minnesota Timberwolves got last season from Julius Randle and Naz Reid, who, in case you haven't been paying attention, sports fans, no longer play for the Minnesota Timberwolves. We've been trying to figure out how Minnesota would fill what appears to be a pretty significant hole at the four after all their wheeling and dealing to bring in LaMelo Ball. You know who'd be a pretty interesting answer at power forward in Minnesota is LeBron James. And our pal John Krasinski of The Athletic reported that among the teams that reached out on Tuesday after Rich Paul was basically like, you know, make your pitches, guys, are you interested in LeBron or not, that the Wolves were one of several teams who reached out on Tuesday to make that pitch. And the argument for it, as John Kay kind of like laid out, the Wolves have a spot ready for him. They've got a ton of youth on the roster to be able to kind of take the physical burden off of him. They can surround him defensively with Rudy Gobert on the back line, Jaden McDaniels and Anthony Edwards on the wings around him. They had the athleticism and physicality of second unit guys like, you know, Terrence Shannon Jr. and Jalen Clark and whatever. Like, they can sort of surround him, flank him physically, take the tougher matchups off his plate. Offensively, he wouldn't have to be the number one ball handler and ball carrier and creator, because that's what you got Ant and what you got LaMelo Ball for. And you can have these ways where he can sometimes be on it, sometimes be off it, play in lineups with either one or both of Ant and LaMelo, and be able to kind of play the bully ball style. He sort of replaces Julius Randle's bully ball style, but also provides some of the stretch that Naz Reid gave you. He sort of squares their circle in a pretty interesting way there. And all of which is to say, all of that goes along with, according to this, and I found this out yesterday, because I made a joke yesterday, like, I'm Googling best golf courses in Minnesota. According to a 2025 article in Golf Digest, the Minneapolis-St. Paul area might be one of the most underrated golf regions in the U.S., with six of the top seven courses in the state within a 30-minute drive of the Twin Cities, including Hazeltine, which has hosted a handful of major championships and the Ryder Cup. So really, it might all be coming together here, where, like, wow, your new interest and another Team USA teammate and LaMelo Ball, who, if nothing else, it would be very interesting to see how they would interact, and a potential chance to stay in the West, maybe kind of sort of stick it to the Lakers, and put yourself in position to compete for a championship. So, Tom, what say you to the idea of LeBron James Timberwolf?
That is so crazy that we're think about what we're doing here. In year 24 of his career, we think the best destination for him is the Timberwolves, A, and B, because they have an underrated golf community. It's amazing.
Well, it's all part of the pitch. Oh, listen, I'm sure you put Tim Connelly in a room with him. I'm sure he's going to bring up everything he could think of to try to get him on board. And listen, underrated golfing might, we've reached a point where underrated golfing is part of what LeBron's going to be thinking about.
Yeah, but to me, the tough thing there is, like, I think it isn't a win-win situation for him. Like, when in the open, when we were talking about how I think his next destination would be low stakes, I think there would actually be high stakes in Minnesota because of the championship drought there and LaMelo Ball not having any playoff experience, and Anthony Edwards not being able to get over the hump, being in the Western Conference Finals 2 years in a row, and then wasn't able to get there last year. They move off of Julius Randle and Naz Reid. What's their grand plan? Well, we're going to bring in LeBron and LaMelo. It does seem like, to me, for LeBron, it's the same reason why LeBron never did the dunk contest, is that it doesn't feel like a win-win situation. It feels like a lose-lose situation. For the Minnesota Timberwolves, I think on court, he addresses a lot of their issues. Does he want to play next to Rudy Gobert? He's one of the best defenders in the league still, but in terms of offensive fit, is that what LeBron James wants to get in the business of. But then again, if he has LaMelo Ball and Anthony Edwards, he could just be, you know, not coasting for 60% of the year, but he wouldn't have to carry as much of a load. I feel like what would you peg it at, Dan? So I'm going to go Cavs most likely, then I got Miami, Golden State, and then maybe a distant fourth would be the Minnesota Timberwolves. Do you have Minnesota higher than Miami on it wouldn't shock you if he went to Miami, but I feel like it would shock me if he chose Minnesota.
Yeah, I think it is an exceptionally long shot, right? Like the odds I wouldn't peg particularly high. Now, I don't have like a special number for Miami, but let's take a few minutes just to talk through that idea, because I understand it. It's, you know, threads the needle somewhat of the narrative component, you know, the mending of fences with Riles and Spo and whatever. My first blush thought about that when I think about that is I'm like, whatever the Heat need, it doesn't feel like that's it, right? Like it feels like the idea of saying, we made our big swing and we got Giannis in the building and we're building around Giannis and Bam. That is the core of where we move forward, and saying, but also LeBron's going to come in, because remember that. I feel like that something about that doesn't sound right for what Miami's trying to do. And in the on-court component of it, like that's a little too samey, it feels like to me. Bam and Giannis and LeBron all kind of like eat off the same plate a little bit in terms of how they approach things offensively and where they're best utilized. Am I like overthinking it and just saying, well, no, get the best player you can get and then you figure everything else later? Or like, does that seem to you like it might not necessarily fit all that neatly?
I think Miami works as a destination. Of course, the Riley coming back and playing in Miami, all that stuff, all those feel good stuff. I think for Miami, what you're offering is the best player of any of those destinations in Giannis Antetokounmpo. And you don't have to play the high level defense because they've got that. They've got a top five defense as is, with Andrew Wiggins picking up all the good wing players. You've got Giannis and Bam on the back line. They need a point guard. So LeBron can be the point guard, quote unquote, on a team, or someone who handles the ball a lot and doesn't have to really think too much about exerting himself defensively at a high level until playoff time. I think Miami, they needed shooters, for sure needed shooters around Giannis and Bam. And while LeBron James is not an elite shooter, last year his shooting dipped considerably to 31.7% from downtown. And in the playoffs, shot 33% from downtown. It doesn't seem like a lock and key fit in terms of that skill set. Is that the Giannis, Bam front line kind of demands that they're surrounded by three other shooters. Davion Mitchell is, I think, kind of a placeholder point guard for this team. They don't have Norm Powell, but for LeBron, he can kind of have the upside of being the director of the offense with two other ball handling bigs, so it's not everything, and an elite defense. So I think you can trust Spo in that they'd be able to orient the offense enough to get enough shooting onto the floor. And we've seen them being able to do it. We did a whole big number on this last week, is they have continued to get diamonds in the rough and find them and build around them in a way that few other teams can. And so the player development, the coaching, and the defense, to me, LeBron James is going back for a lot of the feels, the vibes of going back to Miami one last time and reuniting as maybe he and Riles go into the sunset. Who knows? If that truly is his white whale. Like, I got Giannis and LeBron, I am whole. I think...
Okay, but hold on. Because you said earlier that your thought was this is about LeBron being able to sort of exercise power, right? Like, how do I, you know, we're going to sub in the term happiness for power, but like that this is kind of in which organization has he famously had the least power and control? It was in Miami with Pat Riley. It was his, you know, he couldn't get Pat Riley to come down out of the front office to go coach on the sideline because Riley was like, no, I believe in Spo. We're sticking with him. It couldn't be, you know, X amount of people on the plane. I took the cookies away, whatever. Insert your story from LeBron's time in Miami here. And then on top of that, he's the second most important addition they make this summer, right? Like he doesn't come mm-hmm. in as the conquering hero or the finishing piece. He comes in as like, oh, right. Yeah. And you too. So again, something of, I hear what you're saying. And I, and like, imagine you are right to point out that if I'm thinking of this as LeBron might be like sort of inherently duplicative to Giannis and Bam, I am probably not giving enough credit to A, LeBron's ability to do everything at a really high level. And obviously that LeBron's been primarily a ball handler and point guard for most of his life. B, Eric Spoelstra's ability to arrange the pieces on the chessboard such that you're going to maximize the abilities of those guys. C, maybe even Bam Adebayo, because I have, you know, we've talked a lot about his ability to, or his ongoing effort to become a stretch five, right? And so like, he upped the volume, not really the efficiency last year. Maybe that is an ongoing practice. And before we know it, he's shooting it like Brook Lopez from out there. I don't know. It's certainly possible. And so like, assuming that you get the talent in the door and then everybody sort of finds their answers around that, certainly possible. It just, it feels to me like that part of like, if you can make the argument, if he goes to the Warriors, it's like for that feel good story. If he goes to the Cavs, there's the feel good story. You know, insert other place here. You know, he goes to play with Jokic because it's like, it would be fun to be alongside another genius in Denver, whatever. Minnesota, I don't think is real, but it was fun to talk about. With Miami, it's the idea of like, we kind of did our big thing and now we're just doing something else too. It feels almost secondary in a way that LeBron has never felt.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally get that. That's why Miami, I don't think, is number one on my list. I think Cleveland, in terms of exerting power and leveraging that power and just being able to kind of play the chess master in Cleveland once again, is the reason why I think they're for me, the most likely scenario is that he goes there. Like the Miami thing, maybe it's a Bronny James, you know, like I want Bronny to come over here with me. If you can execute a trade to get Bronny to play with my next destination, maybe that's something he brings to the table in Miami and just says like, I want to be happy. I want to play with Bronny. Are you guys willing to play ball on that? That might be the way that he flexes whatever leverage he has in these talks. And maybe the Miami Heat are like, now we're good. We need to save that roster spot for, you know, a more knockdown shooter. Although Bronny was not bad from downtown last year. I will say it is not the best fit for all the reasons that you laid out. Giannis is going to Miami to win titles. LeBron going to Miami feels like a different North Star about what he certainly wants to win titles. But I think there's also an emotional journey too that he would be finishing in Miami that might not be pure in the sense of I just want to win a title and do everything I want to do to win that title. Sure, Pat Riley, Eric Spoelstra, and Giannis and LeBron are all going to want to win a title, but there is that story, the off-court stuff that I think might get infiltrated in the locker room that we just learned a lot about the Giannis and the lack of everyone being on the same page. That just happened in Milwaukee. And I don't think that in Miami, you would want to have any sort of extracurricular incentives for LeBron James and wrapping up his career in the way that he wants it to. That's why I think it's Cleveland. I don't think the Warriors thing is as easy as it says, as it seems, but I wrote about this at the deadline was when they got James Harden. I was like, what if they got LeBron and Giannis, and then Giannis is going to Miami, and now we're talking about maybe LeBron going to Miami with him. But I think at the end of the day, maybe it is the most logical destination for LeBron, and why they're leaking that he's willing to play on a minimum contract. He understands the financial dynamics at play with the Cavs. They were a second apron team last year, and it's going to be pretty difficult if he is trying to get a real payday. It's not going to be Cleveland, which is why I think all that smoke is coming around Cleveland or directed to Cleveland, because it just seems like if LeBron James is putting it out there that he wants to be happy and that it's not about money, well, what team is most financially cash-strapped and the one that could bring a lot of I'm coming home, feel good vibes? It's Cleveland. So I think that's, we'll see what happens. Did it happen already? I don't know. Maybe as we're recording this, that it's already been done. But again, the leverage play of like, I'm going to do this on my own time. Feels like the Miami Heat are making moves. like already just trying to fill out the roster. Norm Powell's gone. It doesn't seem like it's being hung up by a LeBron James thing. I think LeBron James goes back to Cleveland.
It's so unbelievable. Like I think at every point in this process over the course of the last, you know, whatever, 15 years, like Miami, the first time I got going back to Cleveland the first time, I was like, no shot, no way. And then it happened. And then once that happened, I was like, well, then every bridge can be, you know, rebuilt, every fracture can be mended. And then obviously he wins the championship there. And yeah, it's like that flags fly forever and you're, you know, a hero for all time. So like, yeah, it would be wild. It would be incredible, but I can't say it would be unbelievable because, it feels like feels like something that makes the most sense in a situation that's, I think literally unprecedented for a player at this age, this deep into his career at this level, potentially going back for a third tour of duty in one NBA city, with all this time in between. Pretty, pretty wild stuff.
Speaking of wild, so many trades are happening. Dude. Walker Kessler, Kawhi Leonard. We already talked about Giannis briefly here, and we did a whole episode last week. Go check it out. Lots of stuff happening around the NBA. We're going to try to breeze through a couple of them, principally Kawhi Leonard to the Toronto Raptors and Walker Kessler to the Lakers. We're going to talk about all that coming up after the break. All right, so Mikal Bridges, famously profane statement, F them picks. Well, so many first rounders have gotten traded this offseason. And I was wondering about, I think that the story of the offseason, of course, Giannis, Kawhi getting traded, LeBron leaving the Lakers. But I thought that the new reformed lottery, Dan, flattening the odds was going to cripple the trade market. That was one of the concerns, was that the trade market would be crippled by the fact that no team would want to give up first round picks because of the new flattened odds and the upside of having these first round picks. Now that two additional teams are going to be in the lottery and it's going to be flattened odds that you could win the play-in and be in the play-in tournament and still feel like you 16 teams are going to have a chance at the number one overall pick. That's not the case at all, Dan. These teams, if they want a player, they're willing to put in the first round picks. We got Walker Kessler going for four first round picks, two swaps and two unprotected firsts. So Walker Kessler, Utah Jazz, played five games last year because of a torn labrum, is going to the Lakers. In the aftermath of LeBron James leaving, they have pivoted and gotten Quentin Grimes. They've gotten Colin Sexton. They got Walker Kessler. Walker Kessler is going for a higher return than what the Mavericks got for Luka Doncic. They gave up fewer assets to get Luka than what they are giving up to get Walker Kessler. So a 2028 swap, a 2030 swap, a 2031 first, and a 2033 first for Walker Kessler. Dan, we're going to talk about Kawhi in a little bit, but this kind of crossed the wire as we're prepping for the show. I hope this works out for the Lakers, because if it doesn't, if Walker Kessler continues to deal with shoulder issues or is hurt and not able to be the rim protector and the lob threat that Luka thrives next to, I'm not going to say he's going to force himself out of there. Luka Doncic, you're playing with fire because now you have no tradable first. Sure, you could try, if you want to pivot, you move off of Austin Reeves and try to get something for Austin Reeves. But this feels like a very risky move for the Lakers. They get Walker Kessler, but certainly not playoff tested. I wouldn't even venture to say that he's all that high-level basketball tested with the Utah Jazz. But now, like, think about it. Like, his tenure with the Utah Jazz has not been successful from a winning standpoint. And so you're asking him to be the championship caliber center for Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves. They gave up a 2031 first and a 2033 unprotected. and a 2030 swap in an era we don't even know what the draft looks like. So maybe if two teams that are trade partners, Danny Ainge being like, all right, we're going to, this is, I think, a huge point in this offseason. There are some GMs who feel like the 2030, 2031, 2032, that window, that era is actually going to be more valuable because the pendulum is going to switch all the way to the other side that right now it seems like those first round picks in up until 2029 when the system sunsets, it's too flat. And I think maybe some GMs are looking at it that actually the ones after that are going to be more valuable because it's going to be after, you know, Giannis and Kawhi are not at their peak anymore. And because the NBA likes to have this whiplash effect of, oh, we love Vegas and then we don't, we're going to go to the Hinkle Fieldhouse. Oh, we love the draft reform and then we're actually going to flatten it completely. Oh, we love this aspect of the league and then we're going to completely change where it seems like the unintended consequences become too great and they're going to flip in the other direction. The Lakers are saying, we don't think there's going to be any risk of that because in 2030 and 2031, 2033, we're going to have Luka Doncic anyway. And because of the new draft reform rules that we don't even know about in 2030, those picks aren't going to be, those are kind of fake picks anyway. Dan, it's fascinating. Some teams are willing to give those draft picks up and some are stockpiling them. And a team that is young and wants to rebuild into a real contender in the Western Conference, the Utah Jazz said, Walker, see ya. We want those first round picks and we don't have a center, right? Well, Yusuf Nurkic. We're fine with moving forward with Jaren Jackson Jr. and Lauri Markkanen, Ace Bailey and Darren Peterson and Keontae George. We don't need a high level center right now. We're good with Jaren Jackson, who's more of a 4/5. I think it's so fascinating that some teams want those first round picks and others are like, yeah, we'll give you 4 first round picks, 2 swaps, 2 first unprotected to get Walker Kessler, who has played a whopping 5 games last season. And before that 58 games and before that 64 games. So he wasn't a beacon of stability before this. And the Lakers are still betting big on Walker Kessler.
Yeah, I mean, with Walker Kessler, so much of his projection, because you, as you mentioned, like the Jazz, even when he was playing, the Jazz were essentially a laboratory in trying to determine new ways to lose, right? Like most of what the last few seasons in Utah have been this sort of deep rebuild, let's call it charitably, that occasionally drew the NBA's attention to the degree that they fined them $100,000 for the way they were manipulating their roster. And so you like the fundamentals of who he has been on the floor are, they look a lot like what you'd want your starting center to be next to Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves in a Western Conference where you got to deal with Victor Wembanyama and then other big men too, right? 7'2", 250 pounds, one of the elite offensive rebounders in the game. So it's, you know, if Wemby's going to like step up, he's got to work in the same way that you have to worry about Mitchell Robinson and Karl Anthony Towns in the finals. Got to worry about a guy going and being one of the best offensive rebounders in the league on the glass, right? Routinely up in the top 5 in blocks per game throughout his career, block percentage up in the top 5, top 10. The defensive impact at the rim in terms of opponent field goal percentage allowed at the basket, you know, elite in that regard when Walker Kessler's been on the floor. The fundamentals of what it looks like, screen, dive, mm-hmm. offensive rebound, finish, protect the rim, it all makes sense, right? Luka Doncic took the Lakers or the Mavericks to the finals with Derek Lively and Daniel Gafford playing a very similar style of role here. There's theoretical upside, untapped upside with Walker Kessler actually started shooting some threes too. Maybe there's some more to that, some more stretch in the corners. You know, there's some flexibility here, a lot to like. But it is projection. And the word that you use that I think is really apt here is risk. You know, like it's about your appetite for risk and even what you conceive of risk to be. Right. If I'm the Lakers, I can look at this and say the main risk here, if I don't come away from this offseason, from this transaction cycle, with a center for Luka Doncic, it's the thing he wants. It's the thing we've been angling toward. We know we have to like make and keep this guy happy and give him like the fundamental north-south like rim pressure, rim running, like the engine of the offense that makes this all work. And then the guy who cleans everything up on the back end. If we don't get him that guy and we got to run this back with DeAndre Ayton, how pissed off is he in 3 months, right? And like, do we have a new set of problems? So I think that there's that component to it. The draft pick component to it, I think, is interesting because I don't necessarily believe that teams like the Lakers and the Raptors are nihilists, but there's some element to it of like, we don't know what the system's going to look like in 3 years. We don't know if any of us are going to be in our jobs in 3 years. We don't know what any of this is going to sort of look like or what's going to matter most. So if we think we're like if there's a spectrum, midpoint is like exact 41 and 41, even net rating, like really low title equity. If we think we're a little closer to more title equity in 50 wins, versus being further away than that, go for it now. Give yourself the opportunity. Give yourself a shot. There's no such thing, with the exception of, you know, Oklahoma City having stockpiled a decade's worth of picks and San Antonio doing something similar. And then also those guys kind of like lucking into generational talents or not lucking, being savvy in their moves or whatever. But like, if you don't have already the forever stockpile of picks and the generational talent, your windows now are like 3 years. There's a new champion every year. The teams in the conference finals are like rotating pretty regularly. We're seeing powers rise and fall kind of at increasingly rapid speeds. So if you think there's a window now for the next 2 years, 3 years, go get it, because who the hell knows? Heading into the playoffs, I don't know that anybody would have said the Knicks are going to be able to go past. You know, I don't think they can beat Detroit. I don't think they can beat Boston. I don't think they can beat Oklahoma City. I don't think they can beat San Antonio. But things break the way they break. And if you give yourself a shot, who knows? Heading into last spring, or the spring before this one, I don't know how many people were talking about the Indiana Pacers in that way. And then things line up and the matchups work in the way they are. And there may be one obvious catastrophic injury away from being a champion that nobody saw coming, right? This is a world now where it's not, it's very difficult to model 5 years from now, even in irrespective of the part where the league is telling you we're sunsetting these new rules after 2029. Like, so even with if you knew that the draft rules were going to stay constant 5 years from now, it's really difficult to model what the look like in that way and how realistic it is that you're going to have the opportunity to compete year after year after year. So whether this is the wisest course of action for the Lakers, whether Walker Kessler is like a quote unquote A-list center that's going to be the straw that stirs the drink for the Lakers on both ends of the floor, they look at it and say, we had to make a move at center. We had to improve on that position. We had to take this is our opportunity with cap space. We've signed Austin Reeves. We have Luka on the extension. LeBron's cap hold comes off. This is our money. So we got to get a center today. So they do it. I don't know if it's going to work out, but I think that there's something to be said for like, you got to go for it now, because now is more and more fleeting than it's ever been in the NBA.
It's amazing. The medical red flags that these teams are going to have to sort through at this offseason. We're talking Walker Kessler, who was out with a torn labrum for basically the entirety of last season. You know, they have to pass these physicals in order to execute these trades. So presumably the Lakers will double check and triple check after the Mark Williams situation.
You imagine
that they're going to figure out the physical before they print out these jerseys. You could say the same thing about Kawhi, is that the Clippers know his medical better than anybody. There's been a lawsuit about his medical. There's been certainly a lot of consternation about Kawhi Leonard's knees and the condition of those knees and whether he's able to play at a high level. This was the worry a couple years ago. And the Toronto Raptors are like, yep, we're good. We're going to trade not just Brandon Ingram and Grady Dick into this trade. We're also going to put two first round picks, 2031 and 2033 unprotected first round picks.
Same as the Kessler
picks, which, by the way, same as the Miami Heat picks, the 2031 first and the 2033 first. Giannis in that trade, there's a 2030 swap in addition. They also had the 2026 first. So Kawhi Leonard goes to Toronto, and at this age, Kawhi Leonard is going back for three firsts, if you want to count the swap as a first, and Brandon Ingram and Grady Dick. It's a massive haul for the Los Angeles Clippers, but it's for a guy who, in my opinion, is top five NBA player when he's healthy, Kawhi Leonard. I get it. I get it if you're the Toronto Raptors. You're not going to be able to bring in these guys, marquee free agents. The Toronto Raptors just got a top five NBA player. In my opinion, he was the fifth on my MVP ballot. Kawhi Leonard was last year. An absolute monster in the playoffs. They already know that. Everybody knows that. And they've got wings galore that can play two ways. Scotty Barnes, CMB. Their new Allen Graves draft pick is also just like a stocks monster. Blocks and steals. If you're going to go and try to beat Victor Wembanyama, maybe one way is you go get a Walker Kessler or you go draft a Daimara. What if you just get a bunch of OG Ananobis? Like, just got really long, strong, versatile defenders that can ball hawk and can space and can block shots. And that's what the Raptors are building. Is if you're playing this team come playoff time, good luck, man. Good luck against this Toronto Raptors team. And the risk, of course, is there. But as we saw with LaMelo Ball, we saw with Giannis, Kawhi, Walker Kessler, all these teams are saying, we're good with the medical. We're good with sending picks the other way. We're going for it. And it's almost like they're seeing Oklahoma City and San Antonio and saying, we think they're vulnerable. We think Wemby's vulnerable. We think the Knicks are vulnerable. Now they lose Mitchell Robinson. The NBA is so wide open right now because so many teams are willing to put it all, not all in, but so many assets into getting a star player. And the Toronto Raptors are crashing, not just being a good team in the East, but coming out of the East next year and saying, yeah, nine champions out of the last 9 years. We think it's possible because we just did it in 2019 with the same guy.
To the point you just made about what if we made the whole plane out of OG Ananobis, which was also kind of like the idea years ago, right? Project 6'9", the idea like the Raptors were just going to be, it was going to be OG and it was going to be Precious Achiuwa, it was going to be Siakam, it was going to be Kawhi, then Scottie Barnes, like the idea that what if everybody was just the same kind of huge switchable wing? I want to credit the source here, MT Lazarus, sort of scouting Twitter account, right? Noted that if there's a sort of like, it's the, I think of the Bart Torvik version of like a basketball reference search, but the idea of, box plus minus above a certain amount, offensive rebound rate above a certain amount, assist, block and steal rates above a certain amount. So the replicating feel on both ends of the court, assist to turnover, block, steals, and the way you can go after the offensive rebounds. There were four players that since 2008 in college that cleared all these bars. And it was Kawhi Leonard, Scottie Barnes, Colin Murray-Boyles, and Allen Graves. And it's like, yeah, the Raptors have a type.
Is that true?
Yeah, the Raptors have a type. Yeah. And
no way.
Yeah, dude. They've certainly found this sort of combination of, like high feel event-creating defenders that are big and long and switchable and yada, yada, yada. So I think that's interesting. It's notable. The most notable part of this to me, yeah, there you go. Shouts out to our productions crew for bringing this up. Thank you very much. The broader point to me, and tell me if I'm nuts about this, because I saw in the immediate aftermath of the deal, and especially the later reported clarification on when the picks were coming, right? It's two unprotecteds, it's 5 and 7 years out. Kawhi is going to be like 40 years old at that point, probably out of the league at that point. That there is a risk that you are assuming. I don't know. It's too rich a price for a player at this age with this injury history. And my immediate reaction was the Raptors, I think, exited last season with basically no shot at winning a championship. And now they have one. And whether it's a great one or not a great one, Kawhi Leonard, the upgrade from, and I want to say this respectfully, Brandon Ingram is a player who I've written about a number of times over the years, made a couple of all-star teams, was an all-star last year. And a valuable 82-game player. He has had his struggles in the postseason over the last couple of times that he's been there. and the Raptors essentially, their offense was like drawing dead in the first round against Cleveland, who's not an elite opponent, right? The jump from Brandon Miller to Kawhi Leonard in terms of what our half court offense looks like, what our crunch time offense looks like, our ability to generate good looks, to demand attention and create opportunities for others. To me, that is like one of the larger potential moves on the board if you were keeping the rest of it pretty constant. And I think obviously the determining factors here are going to be health and availability, and maybe we're putting a little bit too much emphasis on, you know, Alex McKechnie and the sports science team there in Toronto that figured out the people that introduced us to the term load management, right? But them being able to get Kawhi through the regular season and through a postseason healthy for the first time in an awfully long time. But to me, the risk here, again, going back to that idea of what's risk, the risk here is you just spend the next couple of years with Scottie Barnes and Colin Murray Boyles and, you know, RJ Barrett, you're going to have to extend him, and Emmanuel Quickley, you're paying him that money. But you have this kind of like nice team that doesn't go anywhere. The risk is you've spent all this money and you've made all these picks and you've made all these moves and you kind of don't go anywhere. This, to me, is a risk worth taking because maybe it drops the floor out if Kawhi gets hurt, but it provides a ceiling that the Raptors, as previously constituted, did not have.
Dan, EPM, expected EPM next year, or right now as it stands, it's Victor Wembanyama, number one. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at Nikola Jokic at plus 7.3. So you got Victor Wembanyama plus 7.8. You got Nikola Jokic at plus 7.3. Kawhi Leonard also at plus 7.3. Tied for the second most impactful player in the NBA, according to at least one highly predictive metric. I mean, we know how good Kawhi Leonard is, but I don't think we can overstate how awesome he was on the floor last year. The aspiration scandal hanging over the franchise, he was still an absolute monster. And yeah, they pivoted midway through the season, trading James Harden, trading Ivica Zubats, and now they have done a complete rebuild on the fly. The Raptors, they're going to be so tough next year. They're going to be so tough. They left. Who's your favorite? I want to leave it to you. The Lakers just signed a guy away from them that you have on this show loved to say, and they're going to lose. The Raptors are going to lose that player. But yeah. Would you, for the fans out there, they would love to hear which player the Raptors are going to sorely miss next season.
Sure. It's Sandro Mamukelashvili, Georgian by way of Seton Hall, I believe. Who is going to be signing with the Lakers to be kind of like a stretch four or five for them. I think Mamu's going to play real well in LA. I think he brings something to that offense. I think he'll be missed in Toronto. But I think the idea of the Raptors found something in the playoffs when it was like, okay, we kind of got to start with Jakob Poeltl. We're paying him a lot. He's our incumbent center. We need size and rebounding. We're closing all these games with basically Scottie Barnes and Colin Murray Boyles at the 4-5. You add in Kawhi Leonard to that in terms of what, and now, yeah, Kawhi is not the same like strong arm robbery dude that he was in San Antonio when he was winning Defensive Player of the Year, right? But if you can roll out a front court of those three dudes to be able to guard, with Jamal Shedd as an absolute like pest at the point of attack, like somebody that just blows up screens and gets around and hectors you. 94 feet of ball pressure. Jacoby Walter, who didn't go out in the deal either, is another big long wing. Like, they are going to be a menace defensively. And yeah, I mean, I should pump the brakes a little bit and note that the last time we saw a 34 or 35 year old all NBA player get dealt to a team that wanted to raise its ceiling, the Kevin Durant era in Phoenix didn't go super hot. There is a downside here. It is, you know, and whether that's due to the something not jiving, Kawhi getting hurt, maybe not having enough respect for what some of those pieces going out could add to the team. Maybe it's the downside risk of the picks, yada, yada, yada. I think there's certainly a possibility that this feels like it's going to be different because we've seen Kawhi win in Toronto, but that was a long time ago in a very different world. It's certainly possible that just plugging in his EPM is this into what they do makes them, it doesn't add up quite that way. 2 + 2 doesn't necessarily equal 4 in those situations. But to me, the risk of stagnancy and of not looking at saying, Scottie Barnes is real. And these, like, his chance of being like prime age, one of the best players on a championship, this is the next couple of years. Give him a chance in the same way that we got to get, it's not on the same level, but like we got to get Luka a center because like this is now. We're paying this guy. He's our guy. The chance is now. We got to go do something about this. Bam is our guy. We got to go do something. Actually give him somebody that he can go out there to go to war with. That's this for the Toronto Raptors. And yeah, maybe it blows up in their face and in 3 years, they're saying, man, what happened to all our picks? And we got to try to redirect and, you know, we're blow. Okay, it's now Scottie's on the market and we got to blow everything up. But if you never take a shot at winning the whole thing before you get to that point, then what are we even doing here? And to me, that I think there's something to be said for that. Like, yeah, we're all dying in, you know, like on a long enough timeline. Get busy trying to live, right? And like, that's what this is. Yeah. The collective bargaining agreement, the NBA world as it exists right now is like, teams have smaller and smaller windows. They cost more and more money. It's harder and harder to get the talent and to keep it. So go for it. The only thing that you really have in front of you is the next couple of years. If you see an opportunity, seize it. Whether it works out or not, I respect the Raptors taking a shot at it.
I do too. I think it was a win-win deal for both teams. I think getting those picks for Utah and for the Clippers and for Milwaukee, these teams are going for it, man. I don't know whether it's that they don't trust Wemby or the Knicks or the Oklahoma City Thunder. I just think this whole draft lottery reform is kind of this new variable that no one really seems to have a good gauge. And so it's created even more, it's greased the wheels on these trades, it seems like. And we haven't even talked about, you know, the Jaylen Brown side of things. So that's not, I'm not breaking any news here, Dan. So don't have your breath taken away from you that the trade just went down. But we'll probably have to do the big number next week about the Boston Celtics, because what they're doing with Mitchell Robinson and potentially with Jaylen Brown is quite fascinating. And Mike Conley Jr. Shout out to Mike Conley Jr. making it for another season in the league.
20 years.
Lots happening, but big broad strokes is, oh my God, Kawhi Leonard is now back with the Raptors. Walker Kessler just got a higher haul than what the Dallas Mavericks got for Luka Doncic. And Giannis Antetokounmpo potentially could have LeBron James or the Golden State Warriors or the Minnesota Timberwolves or Cleveland Cavaliers. It's a lot is unsettled still as we sit here ahead of 4th of July weekend. I can't wait to see what else comes down the pike. We got, I mean, what is that? Kawhi All-Star, Giannis All-Star, LeBron's on the move, Norm just is on the move. How many All-Stars have changed? I mean, Jalen Duren, we'll probably have to figure out what's going to happen there. James Harden, what happens there? There's a lot of moving parts in the NBA right now. And oh my, I can't believe Kawhi is back with the Raptors. That's nuts.
That's ridiculous. Nuts. There was a literal earthquake when he went to LA, and 7 years later, we're back where we started. And who knows, 8 years after LeBron went to LA, who knows, maybe we're back where we started. Maybe this is all just like, it's like Lost. We got to go back. You know, like the only way to move forward is to go back. Maybe that's what this is. Nostalgia is a hell of a drug, but you know, it can be fun. It can be fun while you're feeling the effects. I don't know.
We got to go back, Kate. I love that show. I did it. Have you done a rewatch of Lost? I did a rewatch. That's how much I loved that show when it first came out. I don't know about the ending, whatever, but Lost was an incredible show.
Well, I think what we're hoping for in these NBA stories is better endings than the ones we got the first time, right? So like, you know.
Yeah. LeBron going back to Miami or Cleveland, all these storybook endings. Man, big swings by Minnesota to keep Anthony Edwards happy. Big swing for the Lakers to keep Luka Doncic happy. And certainly their new powers are rising in the East with Giannis going to Miami and Toronto getting back Kawhi Leonard. So can't wait for next season, but lots to happen left on the board. Brad Pauly, Ryan, thanks so much on the production side of the show. Everybody have a happy and safe 4th of July weekend. Enjoy the World Cup. Enjoy all of the fireworks on the NBA side, because there's certainly more to come. Dan, thank you so much, man. And we'll be back again next week.